Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's solicitations as picked by listeners like you. This is Preview Spotlight number 206 for the January 2025 solicitations, with highlights picked by listeners like you. In this episode, we'll be going over some of the items in the upcoming solicitations that you might find interesting. Now, comics are a pre-order business, so whether we like it or not, it behooves us to take a look at what's going to be offered a couple of months out and let our retailers know so they can order appropriately. Now, these episodes have an open submission policy, and I encourage you to send in clips to promote the comics you love as often as you can. Now, there are thousands of items solicited every month, and it's easy for things to get lost in the shuffle, or just fly beneath your radar. We'll be starting with the DC Connect catalog, followed by the Marvel's Previews catalog, and then working our way through the Diamond Previews catalog. Obviously, we aren't going to go item by item, or page by page, or even publisher by publisher. We're just going to hit the highlights, and those highlights are picked by people like you. So with that, let's get going. My first pick is the pre-order catalogs, of which there are so many to choose from. There's DC Connect, there's the Image catalog, the IDW catalog, the Marvel previews, the Diamond previews, the Next Phase catalog over at Lunar, and then there are some items that are in no catalog whatsoever, because they're on Kickstarter or some other thing. But we like to cover all of those things here in the Preview Spotlight. And I like going through all of these catalogs. Now granted, it does take a little time. You can get digital copies of all of these. We've got some links in the forum threads for these episodes. But it's a great way to find out what's coming up, what's for you, and what's not. Because not everything is for everybody. There are certain comics some people are going to love, I'm not going to like. Some I'm going to like, and other people aren't going to love. And that's great. That's why we do these episodes. But that's also why you need to look at these pre-order catalogs. Not every shop is going to get every comic, so to make sure they get the ones you want, you need to know what you want, you got to let your retailer know. So I recommend picking up the pre-order catalogs, either digitally or physically for the ones that are available physically, because not all of them are. Spend a little time once a month going through it, see what's available, maybe you'll find something that'll become your new favorite comic in the future. So once again, that's the pre-order catalogs of DC Connect, Image Catalog, IDW Catalog, Marvel Previews, Diamond Previews, Next Phase, No Catalog, and whatever other catalogs come out in the future.
Hey, this is James here with my first pick in the DC Connect, and I'm looking at Batman number 158 on page 2, and the reason why I'm calling it out, I'm not sure if I'm jumping on, but I just wanted to point this out to people who don't get the DC Connect and may not know that there's a big status or creative team shakeup with Batman. They're bringing back together Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee on art for Batman number 158, where they're taking us basically down a sequel to this duo that we had before. So it says a sequel to the anticipated sequel to the smash hit storyline. And this is it. Anyways, they don't even tell you what the storyline is, but my vision is a little bit blurred right now, and it says Hush Returns, really tiny. I thought they would make Hush bigger, which is hilarious, because I'm looking, they say real big at the top, the hotly anticipated sequel to the smash hit storyline, and then they have no text on what's going on. It just says Jeff Loeb, Jim Lee, an all new epic begins here, Hush Returns, but that's in the tiniest print possible. I will tell you that in the book club, we did do a Hush, the original creative team, when they created the original Hush saga, we did do that. And it didn't read as well as what we remembered for those people who had read it before. And for me, reading the Hush saga the first time, I was like, it's okay. So is this something that make me jump up and buy Batman? Probably not. If I did pick it up, it's for Jim Lee's art more so than the writing, because the storyline itself was just okay. Just, it was that for me. But I did want to let you know, if you are a fan of the Hush saga, you are a fan of Jim Lee doing art, or you are a fan of Jeff Loeb's writing, here it is, the sequel. It's anticipated. It is back. Hush 2. Well, except they don't call it Hush 2. Have a good one. Now, on to the next pick.
Hi, I'm Billy Hogan, host of the Superman Fan podcast, and I go by Superman Fan on the forums. My first DC pick is on page 5 with Absolute Superman number 5, written by Jason Aaron, with art and cover, main cover that is, by Rafa Sandoval, and that's the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are done by Sean Murphy and Jay Lee, with a 1 in 25 variant cover by Derek Robertson, and a 1 in 50 variant cover by Sean Murphy. The regular edition is $4.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale March 5th. Kal-El's life with his parents in the rural Redlands of Krypton is a happy one, but when that entire existence is suddenly threatened, the Els have no choice but to make a stand and fight for the truth. I've read the first two issues of Absolute Superman in my latest shipment from Discount Comic Book Service, and I've thoroughly enjoyed them. Seeing Jor-El and Lara in a different part of Kryptonian society, and this version of Lois Lane is a lot different, and I'm glad I picked up this series.
This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog. It is on page 5 of that. I'm looking at Absolute Wonder Woman number 6, and this is written by Kelly Thompson with art by Mattia De Julius and Dustin Nguyen, and that's what I'm calling out. The main story is continuing the basic idea of Wonder Woman having had her origin in Hell, and it says, Diana defied the will of the gods in leaving Hell and Hades, Lord of the Underworld, takes that personally. But when he interrogates her, her tale surprises him. Will it change her fate? Kicking off a two-part guest arc from the breakout artist of The Cull, Mattia De Julius, and featuring a surprising and delightful backup tale of Little Diana by series writer Kelly Thompson and superstar artist Dustin Nguyen. So what I'm hoping that they do here is they take the Little Batman, Little Diana, Little X-Men, whatever type approach, but do that with the Diana being raised by Hades. I think that would be fun. Kind of a play on the Silver Age stories, you know, where they would have Wonder Woman at various ages in her life, all kind of stacked in the same comic. So hopefully that's what we're seeing here. I think that'd be a funny take. Check it out on sale March 26 for $4.99.
Hey, this is James here with another pick in the DC Connect. And it looks like DC is going all in on the Absolute Universe, which is the replacement of the characters, kind of like similar to Marvel's Ultimate Universe. With the Absolute Universe, it's been a little bit funny because they literally just took away every single characteristic that made them who they are. Let's go take everything about this character and make it completely opposite. But the one that has me interested, and it's just because I am a fan of the character so much, is over on page 6 where we have Absolute Green Lantern. It is going to be written by Al Ewing, and the art is Genoi Lindsay? Man, I cannot read. My vision is very blurry right now. It looks like Genoi Lindsay. I'm like, I've never heard of that name. All right. And it says, without the core, without the ring, without the willpower, what's left is the Absolute Lantern. I say without all those, you're left with not a Green Lantern. But I'm just a big fan of the Green Lantern, so I want to see what this is about. We already have a Lantern who doesn't need a ring, who doesn't have a core, and that happened over in Green Lantern already. But he did have a heck of a lot of willpower. So this guy doesn't even have willpower. Don't know. I'm going to try and like this book. I'm going to check it out because I like the Green Lantern. But this is a buy the first issue and second issue and quickly get off if it doesn't go well. Because this sounds like something that could be a complete mess, but I got my fingers crossed that it's good. So this is more a swing for the fences type of pick. On to my next pick.
Billy Hogan again. My next pick is on page 11 with Adventures of Superman, The Book of El number 1, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson with art and main cover by Scott Godlowski, which is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are by Bjorn Behrens, Raza, and Ricardo Federici, with a 1 in 25 variant cover by Marguerite Sauvage and a 1 in 50 variant cover by an artist yet to be determined. The cover price of the regular edition is $3.99 for 32 pages, And the cardstock variant covers are $4.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale March 12th. Superman Returns. Fan favorite Future State House of L creators Philip Kennedy Johnson and Scott Godlawski reunite for Adventures of Superman, Book of L. As the Super Family settles into a well-earned time of peace, a powerful ally-turned-enemy invades Earth with an army at his back and a god aspect of Olgrun, mad god of the First World. When even the Super Family lacks the power to stop him, Superman is sent against his will to a place even he's never been, where he'll find allies he could never have expected. Concluding the events of Future State and Philip Kennedy Johnson's Action Comics, the Superman event of a thousand lifetimes begins here. This issue sounds like an exciting conclusion to the end of the Future State storyline. My next DC pick is on the very next page with Superman number 24. Written by Joshua Williamson with art by Eddie Barrows and Eber Ferreira. The main covers by Dan Mora, which is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are by David Nakayama, Guillaume March, and Rafael Grazetti. There's also a 1 in 25 variant cover by Fernando Pazarin and Eau Claire Albert, and a courtside cardstock variant cover by Leonardo Romero. The cover price of the regular edition is $4.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99 and is scheduled to go on sale March 26th. Big changes at Supercorps means the ascent of Mercy Graves as the new CEO. Lex's confidant is now calling the shots and rebelling against her super boss, but what does the Man of Steel have to say about all this? Plus, Superwoman and the Justice League devise a plan to put Doomsday under lock and key forever. But it will take a risky arms deal with an alien race to do it. The road to Superman 25 marches headlong into this penultimate chapter in the many deaths of Doomsday saga. At first, I wasn't sure how DC was going to pull off this new story with Doomsday, but the twist that they've introduced into the plot has really hooked me into the story. Billy Hogan again. My next pick is on the very next page, number 13, with Action Comics number 1084, written by John Ridley with art by Inaki Miranda, main covers by Gleb Melnikov, variant covers are by Jay Lee and Nicholas Scott, with a 1 in 25 variant cover by Danny, and a courtside cardstock variant cover by Howard Porter. The cover price of the regular edition is $4.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99. And it's scheduled to go on sale March 12th. Superman is on the verge of discovering who's been luring reformed villains back to a life of crime, but the question remains, why? When he tries to convince Scorch to help him, they're ambushed by a mysterious organization that holds the answers he's searching for. Is Superman ready to face the truth? This has been a great story, and I'm looking forward to discovering how it wraps up.
This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog, this time from page 19 at the top of it. I'm looking at Catwoman number 74. The little tagline above it is, "Can Selina disappear in Tokyo?" I'm going to say the answer is no. We have writer Torin Gronbeck and art by Mariana Ignazzi. And I've mentioned it before, but I sort of come and go from the Catwoman series. But I like the idea of her as this super criminal type person who globe trots and gets involved in things in other places at times, and that's what we have going on here. It says, with everyone in Tokyo searching for her, Catwoman finds herself face to face with Alexander Belov and another unexpected foe. Can she secure the second key to the Belov fortune, or is this the end of the line for the feline Fatale? Plus, the noose continues to tighten around the necks of Selina's old acquaintances. It's only $3.99 for 32 pages, and the art in here looks nice from the preview art from previous issues that I've seen, and I think it's worth checking out from time to time. I like the Catwoman character, and like I said, I like this globe-trotting take on her at times, so I'll be picking this up March 19th.
Billy Hogan again. My next pick is on page 23 with Batman and Robin, Year 1, Number 6, written by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. The cover and art is also by Chris Samnee. with variant covers by Cliff Chiang and Wes Craig, and a 1-in-25 variant cover by Gavin Goodry. The cover price of the regular edition is $3.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $4.99 and scheduled to go on sale on March 19th. Robin is caught in the General's clutches, and it's up to Batman to rescue his intrepid young protege. The Dark Knight knows he's running headlong into a trap, but is the General really prepared for Batman like he thinks? I'm glad I picked up this series that takes a look at the very beginning of the Batman and Robin team, plus the fact that Mark Waid is co-writer on this series is also a plus, because I'm never disappointed by anything he writes. Billy Hogan again. My next pick is on the very next page, number 24, with Metamorpho the Element Man, number 4. Written by Al Ewing, with art and cover by Steve Lieber, and this is the one I'll be getting, with a variant cover by Tyler Crook. The cover price of the regular edition is $3.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant cover is $4.99. and is scheduled to go on sale March 26th. Who could ever replace the merely magnificent Metamorpho? The billion-dollar brain of Simon Stagg has the answer. And it's not a who, it's a where. After all, why recruit a fab freak to protect Stagg HQ when you can bring the whole building to life to protect itself? Genius, you say? Consider this, Metamaniacs. If office buildings could talk, wouldn't they have something to say? Something like, die, humans, die, perhaps? The new age of Metamorpho becomes the new age of contentious urban planning, as only Al Ewing and Steve Lieber could envision it. I'll be getting the first issue of this series in my next shipment from Discount Comic Book Service, so I can't wait to begin reading this new series involving one of my favorite minor DC characters from the 1960s.
This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog. I didn't see this in anybody's list of things to call out. Hopefully I'm not duplicating it, but it's DC X Sonic the Hedgehog. So, not a versus. We have a crossover here with DC Universe and Sonic the Hedgehog Universe. Writer is Ian Flynn. Art by Adam Bryce Thomas. I can't say that I'm familiar with either of those, but for $3.99, 32 pages, we're going to get a crossover story with all of our favorite characters. And let's see, it doesn't say that this is part of a mini series, but you know, this has to be probably like a 4 or 5 or 6 issue type deal. It says it's a crossover event unlike any other. The monstrous dark side crosses dimensions to invade the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, seeking the ultimate power. Sonic and his friends have faced everything from mad scientists to ancient spirits, but the forces of apocalypse may be too much for them. Thankfully, the full heroic might of the Justice League arrives to back them up. Don't miss part one of this unique crossover event. So, this sounds like a lot of fun. If you played any of the Sonic games over time, you know all the characters. And I'm sure they'll all have their fun moments. And, of course, we all know and love the DC characters, so expect some hijinks and some back-and-forth action to get Darkseid back where he needs to go.
Billy Hogan again. My next pick is on page 30 with Batman Superman World's Finest, number 37. Written by Mark Waid with art by Adrian Gutierrez, and the main cover is by Dan Mora, which is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are done by Dan Panosian and Adrian Gutierrez, and a 1-in-25 variant cover by Yasmin Putri, and a Guy Fieri cameo variant by Dan Mora. The cover price for the regular edition is $3.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $4.99, and is scheduled to be on sale March 19th. Superman and Batman have a code against killing, but does the King of Atlantis? As the Floronic Man makes his final play for dominion over the seas, Aquaman is forced to react as a warrior, not a superhero, and the consequences will surprise you. Guest starring Swamp Thing, and featuring a very special celebrity cameo variant from the mayor of Flavortown himself, Guy Fieri. I have fond memories of the original World's Finest series that teamed up Batman and Superman, and I'm glad that Mark Waid and the rest of his creative team has brought it back. Billy Hogan again. My next pick is on page 33 with Superman, The Last Days of Lex Luthor, number 2. Written by Mark Waid, with art and main cover by Brian Hitch. And this is the one I'll be getting because I love Brian Hitch's ultra-realistic art style. With a variant cover by Chris Samnee, and a 1-in-25 variant cover by Francis Manipal. The cover price of this issue is $6.99 for 48 pages and is scheduled to go on sale March 19th. Superman continues his mission to find a cure for what's killing Lex Luthor. When the present has no answers, maybe the future will. But will the Legion of Superheroes help Clark find a cure for a man like Luthor? DC recently reprinted the first issue of this series, which premiered last year. While I have no idea what caused the delay, I'm glad to see the next issue finally out. Plus, I always enjoy seeing the Legion of Superheroes, and I can't wait until DC decides to bring back a new Legion of Superheroes series. And with the recent Darkseid story, DC has hinted that maybe the next Legion series will be a lot darker. They might even be a villainous group, but I'll still be interested in reading it, but that's a different series. I enjoyed the first issue written by Mark Waid because it's somewhat shocking to see Superman trying to save the life of his most bitter enemy. But I guess that shows the hero the Man of Steel is. Billy Hogan again. My final DC pick is on page 36 with The Brave and the Bold number 30 facsimile edition, written by Gardner Fox, with art by Mike Sikowski and Bernard Sachs. The main cover is by Mike Sikowski and Murphy Anderson, and that's the one I'll be getting because I always love to get the original cover with these facsimile editions. There's also a foil variant cover by Mike Sikowski and Murphy Anderson, and this edition carries a $6.99 price tag, which is another reason I like getting the original cover. And there's also a blank sketch cover for $4.99, which I can't see, but maybe because it's a cardstock-type paper. Anyway, the regular edition is $3.99 for 32 pages, and this issue goes on sale March 5th. A mysterious, though temporary, vanishing of their various superpowers has the Justice League rattled when a series of bizarre thefts begins, carried out using the pilfered powers of the League. Can our heroes protect the next targets? The ingenious Professor Ivo makes his diabolical debut alongside his criminal creation, Amazo. I never can resist getting these facsimile editions, especially of stories from the 1960s during my childhood.
This is Jason with my first pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 37, it's Batman's Strangest Cases Limited Collector's Edition number 59, facsimile edition. That's a mouthful right there. It says, thrilled as Batman fights to save a young boy's life in a haunted Scottish castle. Gasp as he matches might with the mysterious Swamp Thing. Tremble as the Dark Knight takes on a coven of demon-worshipping warlocks. These are Batman's Strangest Cases. So this is one of the limited collector's editions that are pretty big size. They're bigger than magazines, so they're more like a tabloid size. And at first, I was a little hesitant to start getting these, but it's actually been really, really fun to go back and relive these. I have not seen all of them, but I have several of the older ones. This is one I have not had, even though I've read several of the stories in here. So this originally was published in 1978. And one of the ones that it has that I really like is from Brave and the Bold, issue 93, where Batman enters the House of Mystery, which, of course, was narrated by the host, Kane. That's a fun story. And there's one called Night of the Bat, and that reprints Swamp Thing number 7. So this is the Bronze Age Swamp Thing, pre-Alan Moore, and Swamp Thing was just getting his footing there. But that was a fun story. That was their first interaction where Swamp Thing comes to Gotham City. Then there's one from Batman 250 called The Batman Nobody Knows. And another one that was a really fun one is in here called The Demon of Gotham's Mansion. Now, this cover from Batman Volume 1, 227 has that same Batman cover where he's looming over like a castle. And That's a very good one. So it's a kind of a gothic type of story there. And then there's one called A Vow from the Grave from Detective Comics 410. And so it has several stories in it. And I really recommend this one. It's a fun classic look at Batman. You get some Neil Adams art written by Denny O'Neill, Lynn Wein, Frank Robbins. Bernie Wrightson, of course, is the Swamp Thing artist. But yeah, it's a really fun read. So I highly recommend this. Batman Strangest Cases Limited Collector's Edition 59, coming out in March of 2025 for $14.99. This is Jason again with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 42, it's DC Finest Events, Zero Hour Part 2. So this is part of the DC Finest line, which are these huge epic collection size format that DC is doing. And this one actually, it looks like it completes the Zero Hour story. So I'm getting to where I prefer these type of trade paperbacks compared to omnibus collections. I just feel like you can see more. It's not as hefty to lift and to try to read. But I hope that they continue putting these out. But this one is, it says, Zero Hour comes to a stunning conclusion in part two of the event that reshaped DC continuity in the 1990s. As the mysterious temporal disruption continues to erase and rewrite history, the few remaining heroes continue to seek out the mastermind behind the crisis. Win or lose, the DC universe will never be the same. Book two collects Flash number 0, Green Lantern number 90, Adventures of Superman 516, Justice League of America 92, Action Comics 703, Justice League International 68, Legion of Superheroes 61, Green Lantern 0, Superman the Man of Steel number 0, Guy Gardner Warrior 24, Justice League Task Force number 16, Catwoman 14, Robin number 10, Showcase 94 number 10, Damage 0 and number 6, and Zero Hour Crisis in Time 0 through 2 and Anima number 7. So with the Zero Hour, it counted down. So it went 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. And so this completes that. So I'm looking forward to reading this in this format and also seeing what else was happening to the other characters in the DC universe at the same time. So I recommend this if you're a 90s DC fan, if you remotely like the Zero Hour event, you know, crisis event that they did. This is Jason with my next pick, also on page 42. It's the DC Finest Superboy, the Super Dog from Krypton. This one looks like it's a Silver Age Superboy reprinting. It says, The Boy of Steel stars in his first dedicated DC Finest volume, collecting tales published between April 1954 and September 1955. So this is actually maybe Golden Age here, right on the cusp of the Silver Age. It says, Despite having superpowers, being Superboy sure ain't easy. Especially if you happen to be growing up in Smallville, Kansas, where subterranean cities, super brats, and robot doubles seem to be a dime a dozen. But it isn't all bad, especially when you have a loyal superdog like Krypto by your side. This classic volume reprints adventures such as Superboy meets Superlad, the Super Brat of Smallville, and Krypto's first ever comics appearance in The Superdog from Krypton. From Adventure Comics issues 199 through 216, and Superboy 33 through 43. So Superboy had his own lead feature, but before that he was in, I believe, More Fun Comics, and then eventually transitioned over to Adventure Comics once they canceled More Fun Comics. But I've always had like a fondness of this particular version of Superboy, Clark Kent as Superboy. Growing up in Smallville, it was always about 20 years behind, give or take, behind what was happening in the Superman books. And this is essentially where the Legion of Superheroes was birthed from, the Adventure Comics Adventures of series with Superboy in it. So I do have a fondness for that particular version. I have not read all of these. I've read several of these. They reprinted a lot of these in the later Adventure Comics, you know, reprints, and they did some digests as well. It's definitely that Silver Age feel of just a lot of strange things happening to Clark Kent, you know, as he was Superboy. But it's a lot of fun, and I look forward to them continuing to doing these collections of characters that we enjoy.
This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog. I'm going to double up on a pick from Jason Z just to throw my support behind this. part of DC's new DC Finest line, like the Marvel Epics they have this month. DC Finest Superboy, the super dog from Krypton, telling, I'm sure, all of his earliest stories. And let's see, it says, yeah, between the years 1954 and 55. And if you saw the trailer for the upcoming Superman movie, you know that Crypto the super dog will probably be everybody's profile picture or something like that, you know, in a couple months as the world falls in love with the superpowered dog. And I don't know anything about any of these stories, but they should be fun. Basically, what you expect from 1950s Superman stories, telling his early days as a young boy growing up in Smallville. And these, of course, feature his dog.
Jason again with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog on page 43. It's Batman Full Moon from DC Black Label. This is a trade paperback collecting Batman Full Moon issues 1 through 4 that just finished up last month, I believe. It says, a werewolf stalks the streets of Gotham City, drawing the attention of the city's greatest offender, Batman. And when the Dark Knight himself falls victim to the Lycan's curse, it tests the hero as never before. Zatanna and John Constantine offer all the help their ancient magics can provide. But in the end, Batman must make an impossible decision to lift the curse, sacrifice his own life, or take another's. So I definitely recommend this story if you are a Batman fan who enjoys his interactions with the supernatural. To me, that's one of the things that always makes some Batman stories like really, really fun, is that there's always this line that he walks of where he's dealing with supernatural characters and somehow is able to deal with them and overcome them. So I definitely recommend this book. I look forward to checking it out. It looks like this one is a hardcover for $29.99 coming out in May of 2025. But this was a fun read. It is a mature title, so there's a little more violence than you would probably see in the regular DC Comics line. But it's definitely a fun read, and anytime you mix Batman with supernatural like vampires or werewolves, I definitely look forward to checking that one out. So I highly recommend this book. This is Jason with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 46, it's Superman Final Crisis, Legion of Three Worlds, the deluxe edition. It says it's a 240 pages for $39.99 on sale on May 6, 2025. From Jeff Johns, George Perez, and Scott Koblish comes the greatest conflict that Superman and the Legion of Superheroes has ever faced, featuring a cast of hundreds in a battle royale for the ages. This deluxe edition collects Final Crisis Legion of Three Worlds, number 1 through 5, and features a brand new introduction by Johns and an extensive commentary section by Johns and Koblish. So this is a series that came out during the Final Crisis so you had like Crisis on Infinite Earths, you had Infinite Crisis, and finally Final Crisis, which turned out was not the Final Crisis, but in the middle of that, you had what was happening to the Legion at that time. And they basically, the story, without, you know, revealing too much of it, it doesn't seem to be related too much to the actual Final Crisis series, but essentially the legions that had existed up to that point, those three different versions of the Legion come together to fight a threat, obviously with Superman at the forefront of it. I do have them. I did collect them when it came out in individual issue format, and it was delayed quite a bit. I don't remember exactly how long, but I want to say it took almost a year to get those five issues out. And I'm not sure what was the particular cause of it. But when they say hundreds of characters with George Perez, that kind of detail is possible. So you feel like if you've read the Legion, you're noting who is who from what Legion. There are occasional parts where you're just like, okay, now which one is he from? But because some of the character variation is not that much different from version to version, but it was a very good story, kind of a culmination of the Legion history up to that point, where all three legions came together and they made it make sense, and the Legion were able to work together and really overcome the bad guys on that one. But I do have it in trade paperback, but I don't have this particular version of it, which has, looks like a quite a bit of a, you know, not only the new introduction, but a commentary section. So I'm very curious about that, how they developed the series, what went into it, what characters to include, and all that. So I'm curious to see how that works. But if you're a Legion of Superheroes fan, this is a great book. If you're a Superman fan, I think you'll really enjoy it. You get to see Superman interacting with the characters. There's a lot of Easter eggs for people who've been reading the Legion of Superheroes for quite some time, but I definitely think it'd be it's a really, really fun story for anyone to check out. This is Jason with my last pick in the DC Connect catalog on page 47. It's Legion of Superheroes, The Curse, Deluxe Edition. Now, this particular one picks up right after the previous one with the Legion of Superheroes, The Great Darkness Saga, Deluxe Edition. This one picks up in Legion of Superheroes issues 297 through 313. It does have annuals 2 and 3 as well. This is kind of my sweet spot for Legion of Superheroes. Very classic stories, very fun stories. Paul Levitz was pretty much the writer. You had Keith Giffen as well helping out, and Keith Giffen as well as being the artist. There were some other artists as well. This is probably from the early 80s, and just a fun read, and it really fits together with that Great Darkness Saga storyline and just continues evolving the characters from there. So when I think of the Legion, this is probably the group I most think about. Superboy and Supergirl are still involved at this point. So I really look forward to checking this one out, and I highly recommend it if you're trying to go back and collect the classic Legion of Superheroes run.
What's up, guys? X-Men Patrick here. And we are in, I guess, the Image catalog. I'm looking through Previews catalog, but we'll say the Image catalog. And I'm looking at Battle Beast number 1. It's on page 3 in the Image catalog. 165 in Previews. If you don't know about Battle Beast is a beast that he wants to die, but he wants to die in battle. So he's willing to fight everyone and anyone to give him a worthy death. And in Invincible, he destroys Invincible and only gets beat by Thrag, who is like the main Vertramite who kills other worlds and stuff. Anyway, before I get more into that, my dog's going crazy. Writer is Robert Kirkman. Artist and cover artist Ryan Otley and Alisa Leone. Series premiere. The best new, not a quite superhero series in the universe. Cursed with an unquenchable thirst to violence. Battle Beast searches the universe for one more warrior mightier than him and a glorious death, his only reward. But even in a universe of mighty Vertramites like Invincible and Omni-Man, it seems that no one may be able to stop the galaxy's most deadliest warrior, unless he does the unthinkable. Superstars Robert Kirkman and Ryan Otley, blah, 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 blah. It's going to be a fun book. Don't know how long it's going to go. 40 pages, $3.99. Pick it up. All right, on to the next one.
Hey, this is James here with a pick in the Image section of the main Previews catalog, not the same page number as the Image PDF. So I'm on page 166 in the main Previews catalog, where they have a book called Assorted Crisis Events, written by Dennis Camp, and art is Eric Zadowski. I can't pronounce his name. Eric Z, we'll say. Dennis Camp is writing the Ultimates right now. You're doing a fairly good job on it over at Marvel. And so this one was kind of weird. I was like, Assorted Crisis Events. It sounds to me like something that the reason why I'm calling it out is really to kind of bring attention to it. I don't know, something like maybe a person who's real fond of DC and liked Crisis on Infinite Earths. It plays into that, not exactly, but plays into that nostalgia a little bit. Series premiere, Time is Having a Crisis. Mingling in the Red Light District, you can find actual cavemen, medieval knights, and cyborg soldiers on leave from World War IV. Victorian debutantes amble their way into cell phone stores, confused and bewildered. What is a data plan? On the way to work, bleary-eyed commuters get trapped in time loops, assaulted by alternate reality versions of themselves, and try to avoid post-apocalyptic wastelands. And look, the 315 bus just took a wrong turn into the Neolithic area. Rising Stars, Dennis Camp, okay, on and on and on. But it's basically kind of a play on Crisis, where you had all these different worlds and variations of Infinite Earths, the Earths that we see with Superman and Batman and whatever, and whatever these characters, trying to morph them into one universe way back in the 80s when Wolfman did that. And so he's taking his own little world and doing this, and it's a play on it. I'm not sure if I'm going to pick this up, but I think people who are nostalgic for Crisis on Infinite Earths, they might find this a clever read. something fun to dig into. And so that's why I'm highlighting. On to my next pick.
What's up, guys? X-Men Patrick here, and I'm still in the Image catalog, or in the previews book. Previews, page 170. Image, page 35. All right, we are looking at Bug Wars number 2. I wasn't on the recording last month, so I was thinking how to, word this. I'm hoping it's like the movie Epic. It's a cartoon movie about how people get shrunk, and they're saving a seed, and it's pretty cool. And then there's a book called Micro by Michael Crichton. Same guy who made Jurassic Park and stuff. That is a book about how they shrunk people for war and stuff. That was a really good book. Pick it up if you want to read it. I'm trying to think of the other ones. A Bug's Life. Ants, this kind of stuff, like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I've always been into ever since a kid and read that book. And now Bug Wars seems like it's right up my alley. So Bug Wars number 2, written by Jason Aaron. Artist is Muhammad Aswar. Cover artist, you got a couple of different covers. Lost in the Yard. Slade. Slaymaker is lost in his own backyard, prisoner of a tiny bug-riding warriors known as mites, and in Swarm City, the most dangerous hive in all the yard. Slade will have to learn to unleash his newfound powers, or else watch his family die. This book is $4.99. It's 2 of 6. I have one on pre-order. I'm waiting for number 2. I will be reading this whole thing. All right, on to the next one.
Billy Hogan again. My only Image Comics pick is on page 172 of previews with Geiger number 12, written by Jeff Johns, with art and main cover by Gary Frank and Brad Anderson, and this is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers by Martin Mariazzo and Chris O'Halloran, who team up for one variant cover, and Gary Frank and Brad Anderson team up to do another. The first year of the hit ongoing Geiger series ends with a nuclear showdown. As Geiger fails to take control of his explosive power surges, he must finally face the other glowing man. But this radioactive counterpart has a secret weapon that could destroy everything. Plus, Junkyard Joe and Nate the Nuclear Knight continue to uncover the secrets behind the unknown war. This issue is scheduled to be in shops on March 12th for the cover price of $3.99. I'm glad to see Geiger is a continuing series and not just a mini-series. And I always enjoy seeing Junkyard Joe again. I wouldn't mind if he got his own ongoing series.
What's up, guys? X-Men Patrick, and I am still in the Image. I'm on page 177 on previews. Well, we're looking at page 55 of Image. I am looking at Transformers 18. I am hoping... I am behind on my reading, but I am hoping that Transformers 18 introduces G.I. Joes fighting with the Transformers. Reason why I say this is the writer is Daniel Warren Johnson. Artist, George Corona and Mike Spicer. It says Autobots versus Decepticons versus Redacted is already devastating Seattle, but none of them are prepared for how it will end. This is going to be interesting because I do believe it'll be with the G.I. Joes. And like I said, I am a little slow on my reading. I don't think it involves Void Rivals in this one. So I think that's the only one left would be G.I. Joe. So let's hope. On to the next one.
That was Nick with a pick from the Image section of the main previews catalog. So in this case, it's page 168, but there are the Image catalogs that float around out there too. So you might have seen it elsewhere. This is the Grommets trade paperback. Now, this issue made some waves this past year with a lot of critical acclaim as people tied back to their 80s nostalgia, especially readers who were teenagers during that time period with the rise of skater culture and all the things going on at that time. It's the 7-issue slice of life 80s culture type story, and it is based on the experiences, I believe, of real life friends Rick Remender and Brian Posehn. The artist on the series is Brett Parson, and here's what the kind of synopsis for the whole series is that they're advertising for this trade paperback collection. And before I forget, it is $16.99. Two outcast friends navigate the Sacramento suburbs of 1984, where they find a home in skateboard culture and punk rock. Grommets is both an authentic look at 80s skate culture, a snapshot of the generation that turned skating into a worldwide phenomenon, as well as a heartfelt coming-of-age story following two friends from troubled homes navigating their damage in an era when no one cared. The series title sprints from skater slang. A grommet is a commonly used term for a young, up-and-coming skater or surfer. Since the 60s, it's been used to describe the next generation of kids who, with youthful exuberance, love the sport but want to put their spin on it. Perfect for fans of John Hughes' Brat Pack teen movies, Freaks and Geeks, and Dazed and Confused. I would agree with that. I think if you have seen, like, Ferris Bueller or any of those kind of movies and resonate with the time and the place and all of those kind of things, you're going to love this story. The art is fantastic, cartoony in all the right ways, and you get these nice little moments of teenagers doing teenagery things. So even if you didn't grow up in the 80s, I think you'll enjoy this. Check it out if you didn't find this in monthly single issues.
What's up, guys? X-Men Patrick here, and it is 25 degrees out and snowy in Jersey, or at least there's still snow on the ground. I am looking at the Marvel previews, and of course, we're looking on page, I guess you call it two, Godzilla vs. Fantastic Four number one. Ryan North is the writer. Unfortunately, John Romita Jr. is the artist. I can't stand his art. Cover art by Adam Kubert. And if you look at the back of this, Adam Kubert has the poster of this cover, and it looks amazing. I want to get that poster. Back to the description. You know you're going to have 500 covers because it's a number one and it's a small series. So we're looking at Marvel's Greatest Heroes Must Fight Godzilla from Across the Eras. The Battle of the Century starts here. The start of a six sensational action-packed issues with Marvel heroes battling the King of Monsters from its many different eras. How will Godzilla's lore mix with the mighty Marvel Universe? Find out as history is twisted when icons of the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, Hulk, X-Men, and Thor go face-to-face with one of the greatest monsters of all time. This issue witnessed a threat never before seen as King Ghidorah descends on Earth with a power cosmic as Galactus, newest herald. And the Fantastic Four stop him from destroying New York along with the rest of the planet? It's a city-smashing spectacular as Godzilla, with the help of the Silver Surfer, join forces to stop the world from certain annihilation. A must for Marvel and Godzilla fans. I'm collecting it just because I love these one-shots, randoms, with random monsters and everything, with Predator, Aliens, Godzilla. Like, I picked up the DC ones with Godzilla and King Kong. I love this stuff. I love mixing it up. I really wish they would mix Aliens with Star Wars, or Star Wars with Guardians of the Galaxy, or Star Wars with Marvel Universe in general. That is my biggest wish and hope. I am picking up all 60s probably. Like I said, I want to get that cover, that poster of that cover. I don't see me not picking any of these up. So pick them up. Let me know what you think. On to the next pick.
Billy Hogan again. My first Marvel pick is on page 10 with Fantastic Four number 30, written by Ryan North. Art is by Corey Smith, and the main cover is by Joshua Cassara. Saira Kangiolosi does a What If FF homage variant cover. Dyke Ruin does a foil variant cover, as well as Gleb Melnikov. He does another foil variant cover. Inhyuk Lee also does a variant cover, and Peach Momoko does a Kimoko variant. Fantastic Three. After Ben Grimm has suffered a terrible and very public defeat at the hands of Doom, he's left lost, adrift, and more vulnerable than he has been in years. And when a trip to New York goes wrong and his fate suddenly turns from bad to worse, Ben has never been more vulnerable, and soon takes a shocking shortcut he won't be able to undo. This is one thing in Alicia's story you won't soon forget. Rated T+, and is scheduled to be in shops on March 26th for the cover price of $4.99. This reminds me of some of the classic Lee and Kirby Fantastic Four stories from the 1960s. When Ben Grimm would suffer some trauma and leave the Fantastic Four because of various reasons. So I'm looking forward to reading this issue and discover what things are in store for the Fantastic Four and the Thing in particular, as well as Alicia.
Hi, X-Men Patrick here, and I am on page 10. All this stuff is One World Under Doom. There's a couple smaller runs. I'm picking up One World Under Doom number 2. I'll read the main story, but I'm not picking up Doom's Division, Thunderbolts, Doom's Academy. I'm not picking any of that up. I am picking up the Red Hulk number 2. My main draw was Fantastic Four number 30. Will they keep Ben Grimm out of rock form? According to the covers, like the little variant cover and cover A, Ben Grimm loses his rock form and he gets destroyed by Doom. If that is true, that would be a game changer. But we know how Marvel Comics does it. We know by the end of this, Stephen Strange or maybe even Mr. Fantastic is going to find a way to bring him back to his rock thing form. I wish they wouldn't. I wish some of this stuff would stick for a little bit. Like Hulk was dead for a few years. Like Cyclops was dead. Wolverine was dead for a few years. And that's, of course, they're going to bring it back because they're the lore. You know, Fantastic Four has to have the thing. Like X-Men needs Gambit and Wolverine and Cyclops like need them. But like, kill them off for a little bit. Give us a break from them and see like what else you can do. Like, come out with good stories. Like, this would be cool. If this sticks, maybe they can come out with Fantastic Four where She-Hulk rejoins them. Or, you know, like somebody else. That would be cool. I'm not all for reading Fantastic Four books. I know there's a few of you guys out there that read all the Fantastic Four. I know of Fantastic Four from the movies. I've read some comic books of Fantastic Four. Again, not the biggest fan of Fantastic Four, but if Ben Grimm would to go down and become a human again and to be hanging out with his wife, Alicia, like, cool. Like, who else is there? What else can Ben do? Can he just be their driver or whatever? Like, I'm all in for that. Let's do it. Fantastic Four, number 30. Ryan North is the writer for this one, just like he is for the Godzilla one. And it says, after Ben Grimm has suffered a terrible and very public defeat at the hands of Doom, he's left lost, adrift, and more vulnerable than he has been in years. And when a trip to New York goes wrong and his fate suddenly turns from bad to worse, Ben has never been more vulnerable and soon takes a shocking shortcut he won't be able to undo. This is one thing, an Alicia story, you soon won't forget. I'm messing all that up because I'm in the truck, a little cold, waiting for my daughter to be done horseback riding, sorry. So I won't be able to edit out all my ums and ahs and my breaks, and that's what John spends time for, unfortunately. I can't do it this time. So yeah, Fantastic Four, number 30. I'll probably pick up this one and probably number 29 just to see what's going on. This One World Under Doom sounds like fun. I'm in. I'm getting Hulk 2 because why not? Even though it's a short story, I will be getting that one. All right, on to the next one. Only because I said I'm getting it, I might as well read it. We are on Marvel Spotlight or Marvel Preview, page 11, Red Hulk, number 2. Benjamin Percy, who I think is like one of the best Marvel writers right now. Jeff Shaw, it's a great artist, and in the variant covers and covers everywhere. So, The Great Escape. Number one, it said that Red Hulk was captured by Doom along with other people and stuck in prison, and now he's getting out. And you can see there's Deathlok and Machine Man there, and it says also Simon Riker is in there. So, Thunderbolt Ross stages an escape of the think tank where Dr. Doom has imprisoned him. He's been underground so long that the powers of the Red Hulk are fading. He'll need assistance from misfit crew of Machine Man, Deathlok, and General Simon Riker if he's going to outsmart and outmuscle the legions of Doombots that are after them. This is another one. What if they were powered down to Red Hulk? Cool. Like, give it a break. Although we haven't seen Red Hulk in a while, and I love all these variant covers. The variant covers are awesome. I'm good with, like, changing up this stance on everybody. Like, change it up. Depower everyone. Power up random people. Let's write good stories. All right, off my soapbox. Next pick, please.
Hey, this is James here with a pick in the Marvel previews, and I'm over on page 25. I kind of skipped all over all that One World Under Doom thing. And I'm looking at The Thing, number 1 of 5. It is a miniseries. It's by Tony Fleeks, who has been a decent writer, and Leonard Kirk is the artist. And I am a fan of The Thing. And this is The Thing clobbers the Marvel Universe. So, Ben Grimm may be the strongest member of the Fantastic Four, but once upon a time he was just a scrawny kid from Yancey Street. When an unexpected visitor from his past sends him on a search for a missing child, The Thing must unravel the mystery, even if it means becoming a wanted man. Get ready to see ever-loving blue-eyed Thing versus every superpowered criminal and bounty hunter in New York City. Writer Tony Fleeks from Stray Dogs, and I think that's what I'm loving, Stray Dogs and his Ferals, fantastic stuff. And artist Leonard Kirk give a glimpse into the history of The Thing that reminds you Ben Grimm is the heart of the Marvel Universe. $5, unfortunately, that's the price point now. But I'm a big fan of The Thing, so I'm definitely picking this up. On to my next pick.
X-Men Patrick, yes, I'm still in Marvel because why not? New Year. Let's pick some Marvel books up.
Nick Fury versus Fing Fang Foom on page 26. It is a one-shot. Nick Fury versus Fing Fang Foom, number one. J. Michael Straczynski, which is a good writer. Elena Casagrande, I don't know her art. No, she's not the cover artist. Cover artist is Gary Frank. The cover art looks great. She has a variant cover, and there's another Phil Noto variant. Howling Commandos, Tinkon, Fing Fang Foom. Nick Fury knows how to handle problems, no matter the size, but he's never faced a foe this big before. Witness the next chapter in J. Michael Straczynski's team-up event as he's joined by Marvel Stormbreaker Elena Casagrande to bring you one of the wildest pairings in Marvel history. I don't know what his other one was, but I'm going to pick this one up because it's got the old-school Nick Fury and the Howling Commando, so it sounds like fun. It sounds different. All right, on to the next pick.
My final Marvel pick is on page 30 with Fantastic Four number 3 facsimile edition. The writer is Stan Lee, and the cover and story artist is Jack Kirby. And there's also a Jack Kirby foil variant, but I'll be getting the original. The Fantastic Four face the menace of the Miracle Man. In the third issue of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's foundational Marvel Universe building FF run, the First Family adopt their iconic blue uniforms and take to the skies in the Fantastic Car. But just how long is the ever-loving thing going to hide his rocky skin beneath an all-over bodysuit and helmet? Not long, when a towering monster threatens Manhattan, courtesy of the master hypnotist known as the Miracle Man. Can Reed, Sue, Ben, and Johnny defy his illusions and put an end to his campaign of terror? Or will the tempestuous team be torn apart? It's one of the all-time great Marvel comic books, boldly represented in its original form, ads and all. Printing, Fantastic Four 1961 series number 3, and it's rated all ages, and is scheduled to be in shops on March 19th for the cover price of $4.99. And for the price of the foil variant cover, the solicit simply says, please inquire. I've got a few reprints of these earliest issues of the Fantastic Four, and they're a fun read. The team isn't as polished as they would become in later issues. You can see Stan and Jack develop the team as they get a feel for the characters. After a couple of dozen issues, they really get going, and they really hit a high point with the first Galactus story around issue 48 to 50. But it's still fun to see the team in their earliest adventures.
X-Men Patrick here. I'm still in the Marvel previews. I'm on page 39 with Ultimate Wolverine number 3. Chris Condon is a writer. Alessandro Capiculo is the artist and cover. Ultimate variant. Yeah, there's a couple variant covers as always. So, Wolverine versus Gambit. Kitty Pryde. I am a huge Gambit fan, so if Wolverine has Gambit in, I'm probably going to pick it up. The Uncanny X-Men one in here is about Gambit. I'll probably just pick that one comic up and not the whole series. I am collecting Ultimate Wolverine, all of them. I really enjoy this Ultimate Universe. I wasn't around for the first Ultimate Universe, and to me, this Ultimate Universe is fun. It's different. I like it. Like I said, I wasn't around for the other ones. I don't know anything about that one besides Miles becomes Spider-Man and Spider-Man dies. That's the only thing I know. Oh, and Nick Fury comes over from that universe, and now we have the Black Nick Fury instead of the White Nick Fury, because the White Nick Fury goes crazy and goes off in outer space or something. Wolverine versus Gambit versus Kitty Pryde. The Winter Soldier leads a strike against two members of the opposition, Kitty Pryde and Gambit. But do the duo recognize the man behind the mask? $4.99, I haven't been telling you guys, $4.99 has been pretty much every price. Every comic book I've called out so far has been $4.99. Yeah, so that's my normal now, I guess, is $5 a book. If you collect the Deadpool Wolverine 3, it's $3.99, but I'm not collecting that. I'm over Deadpool and I'm over Wolverine, but this Ultimate Wolverine's different. Anyway, on to the next pick. X-Men Patrick here. I'm still in the Marvel previews. I'm on page 43 with The Ultimates, number 10. Dennis Camp is the writer. Juan Figueroa is the artist. Cover by Dyke Ruan. Two covers, obviously. There's an Inhyuk Lee cover. I might actually want that one instead. This may be a political comic now because of what they're doing. I'm going to say no, although the innuendos are there. Gonna pick it up and still read it because I've been collecting The Ultimates the whole time. But after this one, I may drop it if they really go very political. Namor and the Red Skull. Captain America and Human Torch lead a team to recruit their old comrade, Namor. But they'll have to get through the Red Skull gang first. The Red Skull is a Punisher skull. And they are, or all these guys are white, and they have guns, and they're wearing red Punisher shirts and red Punisher hats and do-rags, and I really hope it's not political. Please don't be political. All right, on to the next pick.
Chris Brawley, a.k.a. Brawlinator here, and I've got my picks for the first Comic Book Page Previews Podcast Spotlight episode of 2025. And my first pick takes me over on page 70 of Marvel Previews. I'm looking at Star Wars Jedi Knights number 1, the first issue of a new ongoing series. It's written by Mark Guggenheim, known for his work on Star Wars Han Solo and Chewbacca, and illustrated by Matabek Musabekov. This series explores the events leading up to The Phantom Menace, and the series will feature well-known characters from the prequel trilogy, including Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda, Count Dooku, and Mace Windu. Each issue will focus on different pairs of Jedi as they undertake various missions across the galaxy, while a central threat connects their stories. In addition to familiar faces, you know this series is going to introduce some new characters, explore their interactions within the Jedi Order, etc. I think we'll probably see a lot of action sequences with lightsabers, and it says there's going to be a new villain targeting Qui-Gon Jinn. Personally, I think this is a good era to focus on, and I think it should provide fans with a deeper look at the Jedi during a pivotal time in the galaxy. I also think this is probably a better area to focus on than something like the High Republic. At least this era is going to have characters that were in the movies, that we're familiar with, that we already have heard the voices and seen the visages of. I think it's a good idea. I hope they can pull it off. If you're a fan of the prequels and you're interested in the era before Anakin and the Skywalker clan, then maybe you should check it out. It's on page 70 of Marvel Previews. It's Jedi Knights number 1.
What's up, guys? X-Men Patrick. Yes, I'm still in the Marvel previews. You probably hear my heat is on now. That's because it's getting cold without turning on the heat in this truck. Star Wars Jedi Knights number 1, page 70 and 71, with Count Dooku on the cover with a green lightsaber. Light blue? Light blue lightsaber. You got Mace Windu, you have Qui-Gon, you have Yoda and Yaddle. You have all of the old school knights. It looks great. We have a Women History Month, I guess... They could have put somebody else on there besides Ahsoka because she wasn't around for this Jedi Knights era. So I think that's a dumb cover. But anyway, Mark Guggenheim is the writer. Matabek Musabekov, I may have messed that up or it may sound even cooler than it should be, is the artist. Cover artist is by Raza, and of course you got 500 covers. First issue in the prequel era. It begins here. Marvel's first series focusing on the Guardians of Peace and Justice in the galaxy, the Jedi Knights. Featuring your favorite Jedi like Qui-Gon Jinn. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda, Mace Windu, among a brand new Jedi to serve as sure-to-come fan favorites. Sorry, now the sun's glaring on the paper and I can't see it. And who is the mysterious new villain targeting Qui-Gon Jinn? $4.99, just like all my other ones. It says order using this number, that meaning that this is last month's or next month's comic, not this month, probably. Surprise, surprise. Star Wars Jedi Knights. Yeah, are we picking up the Kylo Ren series, too? Because it's going to be like the prequel to Kylo Ren. And one of the covers is him fighting a Rancor, which is pretty sweet. So, yeah, I'll be getting that one, too. I stopped picking up the Star Wars stuff recently because I was waiting for something good to come out. You know, something that caught my eye. Not like the last one was the Battle of Mos Espa or something like that. I didn't pick that one up. But this one I'm picking up. This one I'm into. So, grab it with me. Let me know what you guys think. On to the next pick.
Hey, this is James here with another pick in the Marvel previews, and this time I'm over on page 79, where there is an omnibus, and it is The Fall of the House of X, Rise of the Powers of X omnibus, and there are three covers for this, and I'm not sure which one I'm going to get as I'm looking at all of them right now. Written by Jerry Dugan, Kieran Gillen, Al Ewing, Steve Fox, Jed McKay, Sabir Perzada, Ayman Valeni, Fabian Nizia. Pencil by a whole bunch of things. Okay, this is the full shocking conclusion to the Krakoan era. I like Krakoa. I liked the build-up to it. Hickman did a good job. I think there was more life in the Krakoa universe and what Hickman had created. I think they could have squeezed another 3, 4, or 5 years out of that direction. And instead, I think it was taken back to the 90s too soon. There are some people who complained about it. But I can tell you this whole 90s things, I'm just really not enjoying that. I think we went in a not as motivated, not as good of a direction as creatively. I feel like we've gone into a creative, let's go back to what worked before, instead of something that was new and fresh. And so little do we get something new and fresh that it disappointed me a bit. A lot of people didn't grasp onto that, so my fault. But it's basically, this is going to be collecting the Fall of the House X1 through 5, Rise of the Powers of X1 through 5, X-Men 30 through 34, Resurrection of Magneto 1 through 4, Dead X-Men 1 through 4, X-Men Forever 1 through 4, Invincible Iron Man 13 through 20, because Iron Man became a X-book, Avengers 12 through 13, Ms. Marvel, Mutant Menace 1 through 4, Cable 1 through 4, and material from X-Men number 35. It is 1,248 pages for $125, but you will get about 50% off from Deep Discount Comics. I'm going to pick it up and read it again after it's been out for several years and redigest it and see how it goes down, reading it all together back to back. But I did miss Krakoa. I did like it, and it left me with a little bit of sadness when it went away. So that's it for Marvel. On to my next pick.
This is Jason with my first pick in the Marvel Previews catalog on page 92. It's Phases of the Moon Knight trade paperback, illustrating lost lunar lore with past, present, and future Fists of Khonshu. Though he is among the most recent, Mark Spector is far from the first to call himself Moon Knight. The true history and depth of the legacy has been shrouded in the mystery of antiquity until now. Featuring an awesome assembly of creators from across the industry, Phases of the Moon Knight begins with the story of the Moon Knight you know as he enacts his unique and violent vision of justice, and continues with an all-new Moon Knight from the old Crusades, and an incredible version of a Fist of Khonshu and a crime-ridden Marvel Universe older, grittier, and worse for wear than any you've seen before. Plus, more tales of Mark Spector, other incarnations of Moon Knight, and even Khonshu himself. Collecting Phases of the Moon Knight Issues 1 through 4 is $17.99, 136 pages, coming out in April of 2025. So I'm on board with, I would say, most things Moon Knight. And this was kind of fun because you got to see stories of Mark Spector, who is the Moon Knight that we all know and love, but also different Moon Knights from history. But the particular one that I did enjoy was the one who was a knight in the Crusades, and just a very cool character. But it has some other ones as well, so kind of a taste for different people's tastes. But it was kind of interesting, the kind of solidified the idea that Moon Knight is not just Mark Spector, but is an avatar of the Egyptian god Khonshu over the course of literally centuries or hundreds and hundreds of years. And so it was a fun take on that. And so I look forward to having this trade paperback of the collection. So I recommend this if you are a Moon Knight fan, if you are a What If, from that series, What If fan as well, because it just gives you kind of what if Moon Knight existed in different parts of history and civilization. This is Jason again with my last pick in the Marvel Previews catalog. On page 103, it's Fantastic Four versus Galactus. So this collects from the classic Fantastic Four series, issues 48 through 50, which has the first appearance of both Silver Surfer and Galactus, and one of the last times that he interacted with the Fantastic Four in issues 242 through 244. So it does collect basically, I call it the bookends of their encounters or fights with Galactus. And so there were so many different characters who sprang out of that Fantastic Four series. Now, it did bring to mind there was another book that was a little bit different called Fantastic Four Behold Galactus. They did that as a regular trade paperback as well as a Marvel Select. And that one has a few more interactions with Galactus. It has not only issues 48 through 50, but it has 74 through 77, 120 through 123, and then the bookend here of 242 through 244. So you get to see Galactus at different times interacting with the Fantastic Four. Sometimes he's coming to destroy the Earth. Sometimes he's coming to help. You get to see the Silver Surfer as Galactus's herald. But then there's other times when you get to see other characters as Galactus's herald. So anyway, this particular one kind of has those bookends, but it is a good introduction to Silver Surfer. And of course, Galactus, who is one of my favorite characters that has ever been created within the Marvel universe. So I recommend this if you are a classic Silver Surfer fan, Galactus fan, or of course enjoyed that old Fantastic Four run. So this is $17.99 for 136 pages, coming out in May of 2025.
What if you knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, what was going to be solicited next month? What would you order? There's no easy answer, since we don't get next month's Marvel previews today. My next pick is on page 111 of the Marvel previews, and once again, it is the Marvel Early Edition. Now, they seem to be getting better about aligning their catalog and their order form, but we've got three things this time. Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe 3 number 1, Amazing Spider-Man number 1, and Star Wars 1997 number 1 Facsimile Edition. Why they don't have these in the catalog, I don't know. There's a mention that for the Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe 3 number 1 and Amazing Spider-Man number 1, that there are going to be foil variants and they need an increased production lead time for that. But then just solicit the whole damn thing, because it's going to be a little annoying to people to see in next month's catalog Amazing Spider-Man number 1, and oh yeah, you should have ordered it last month. So I really encourage you to look at that Marvel checklist near the end of the catalog, see if there's anything listed there that you're interested in that you don't have on your list of things to get, and either take another look to see if you just missed it, or if it's one of these things that'll be solicited next month. Now, if it is, and you're pre-ordering like I do, one thing you can do is wait until that next catalog comes out from Marvel, get that, check it, and you usually have a few days between the time it comes out and the time you've got to get your order in, because I don't think you should be ordering stuff sight unseen. So, once again, they're doing better on aligning stuff, but they're still not there 100%, so it's still worth checking out the Marvel checklist. And that's, again, on page 111 of the Marvel previews this month.
This is Nick with a pick from the main previews catalog. This is from the Boom section. We have a appearance from Archaea, their imprint that carries some of these old, maybe old's not the right word, more illustrative quality type things. They had done Mouse Guard, the multiple little mini series of square format comics by writer and artist David Peterson, kind of a, what were those books called? Redwall, the mice as warriors and facing all of the woodland creatures and things like that. And nice to see this back. Kind of one of my perennial wishes every year is that Peterson gets back to making some more of these stories, because they're really good all ages content, but just the kind of thing I think that appeals to the right kind of middle school reader who's looking for a way from storybooks into something more advanced, like comics or fantasy novels and things like that. Just bridges nicely with those types of stories. And of course, David Peterson's artwork is always excellent, but I was surprised to see for this miniseries, Mouse Guard, Dawn of the Black Axe, that he's writing it, but the illustrations are Gabriel Rodriguez. And I think that that's the first time that one of these has been done by somebody other than Peterson. So maybe that's a great way for him to get some of his stories out there, not have to shoulder the burden of doing these kind of, you know, highly illustrated things. Mentions that the format is 8 inches by 8 inches. These are 32 pages, $4.99. This is part one of three. And usually they'll collect these in a little square hardbound collection too later. So be on the lookout for that if that's the way you prefer to collect. It says the origins of the legendary Black Axe are revealed for the very first time in celebration of its 20th anniversary. Experience the earliest tale in Mouse Guard history. Adventure with the ancient weapon's first mouse wielder and champion, Bardrick, as he sets off on an epic quest in the newest installment of the Harvey Award-winning series by Mouse Guard creator David Peterson and Eisner-nominated artist Gabriel Rodriguez, who of course they highlight as the artist from Lock and Key, which if I had read ahead far enough, I would have remembered exactly that's what he had done, but I do know I like his art, and there are full 6 pages of preview art available here in black and white for you, and it looks excellent. So check it out in March. This is Nick with another pick from the Boom section of the main previews catalog, page 52. looking at The Last Boy, number 1 of 5. They highlight this as one of their gems of the month, and what stands out to me, I think there's kind of a certain quality of Boom books where this type of miniseries falls in, or like I talked about with the Mouse Guard book, but something tied to more of a literary quality. And in this case, The Last Boy refers to Peter Pan. The writer here is Dan Panosian. It's interesting to see him as the writer of a series. He's been making waves recently with a lot of great covers and variant covers that have attracted attention out there. The artist, here it says, is Alessio Avalon. I don't think I'm familiar with any of their art, and the solicitation later mentions they are a rising star, so maybe they're new on the scene here for periodical comics. It says here, years after Peter Pan's adventures with Wendy Darling, the boy who wouldn't grow up is now the last one in Neverland, still clinging to his adventurous youth. Sounds kind of like comic book readers. Meanwhile, in London, Wendy also yearns for childhood and its freedoms from responsibility as she rails against the transition to adulthood and her family's expectations. As their desires create a mirror of fantasy and reality, a disastrous encounter with the aging Captain Hook becomes the catalyst for Peter's realization that Neverland is growing up without him. But will the two of them find each other once again to carry on their age-old adventures, or is this truly the final threshold of their adolescence? In this modern take on a classic tale from legendary writer Dan Panosian and rising star artist Alessio Avalon. Now, there's no preview art as far as pages go, but there's several character design illustrations in here, and they look great. Again, I think this will have kind of that illustrated quality. Hopefully it's got a painted design, but we'll see. Either way, I think it'll be fun. We all know the story of Peter Pan. We've all watched the movie and sang the songs and all that stuff, so check in for this one, 1 of 5. It says it's $4.99, 32 pages.
My next pick is on page 79 of the Diamond Previews, and it's from Dynamite. It's Thundercats Lost number 1. Now, this looks to be, I think, a mini-series. I don't know, maybe it's going to go longer than that. It's hard to tell these days. Either way, it is starring a different group of Thundercats than the traditional ones. Now, three of them are kind of the second-season Thundercats of Pumaira, Bengali, and Lynxo, but we've also got some new characters of Ligon and Shen. Now, I always thought it was kind of cool when they brought in some more Thundercats, and I'm looking forward to this. I think they've been doing a great job with the Thundercats comic, staying true to the heart and soul of the original cartoon, yet going in a little bit of a new direction here and there, and taking it kind of seriously, but still having the heart and soul of the kids cartoon as part of it. So again, I think they're doing a great job on the main Thundercats series, and I'm looking forward to this Thundercats Lost, expanding the mythos, getting back into this lesser known group of Thundercats and some new characters and stuff. Looks like a ton of fun. So looking forward to that. Once again, that's Thundercats Lost number 1 on page 79 of the Diamond Previews.
This is Jason with my first pick in the previews catalog. On page 91, it's Space Ghost / Johnny Quest, Space Quest number 1. It says, the Quest family is legendary for how far they'll go in the spirit of exploration and discovery, but their latest mission is literally out of this world. Johnny and the gang are brought in to investigate a mysterious, potentially extraterrestrial spacecraft that has been found by the government and brought to Area 51. Of course, where there's spaceships, there's bound to be aliens, right? But what Team Quest finds in this particular UFO is a far cry from the usual little gray men, and it's under the jurisdiction of a literally higher power, Space Ghost. So what happens when the defender of the spaceways and the world's most famous boy adventurer cross paths? The greatest entertainment event of the 21st century, that's what. All effortlessly executed by Johnny Quest's acclaimed creative team of Joe Casey and illustrator Sebastian Perez, with high-gain covers expertly engineered by Mark Spears, Joshua Middleton, Derek Chu, Ben Oliver, and Chad Harden. It says ground control to Major John. So the original, or the Johnny Quest series that Joe Casey, issue 5, just came out earlier, either this month or last month, I believe. And so that finished that series. And in that particular one, without spoiling too much, basically it's not in the 1960s time frame. And it was a good story, even though I kind of wish they had had more. I prefer it to happen kind of in the time that they are in versus trying to put them in different times. Now, this is very interesting in the sense in this series. So I do like Joe Casey's writing of the characters. They feel very real and very true to the original cartoon series. And then on the other side, you have David Pepos, who's been doing the Space Ghost series. So he is not doing this one. It's going to be Joe Casey again. So I look forward to seeing how Joe Casey's version of Space Ghost will compare to David Pepos and obviously his writing of the other characters as well. But I am a big Johnny Quest fan, and I'm hoping that they will meld these characters together. There is a 3-page interview with Joe Casey talking about what his plans are. And it does sound like he's got a good handle on the characters and looks forward to doing well for both of them. So I highly recommend this if you are a classic Hanna-Barbera fan, Space Ghost, or Johnny Quest fan.
Brawlinator again, and now I'm on page 90 in the main previews catalog, and it looks like Dynamite Entertainment is set to launch an exciting new comic series that brings together two beloved Hanna-Barbera properties, Space Ghost and Johnny Quest, with Space Quest number 1. It's written by Joe Casey. It's got art by Sebastian Perez. And I think fans of both franchises can look forward to seeing all their favorite characters from these classic animated series coming together. We've sort of seen this before, I know, in the book club when we were going through Future Quest. One of my biggest complaints was that Space Ghost kept getting, he would just show up at maybe in the last panel of something, or it was just glimpses of him throughout, and I was really hoping for more of him. Honestly, I think Johnny Quest was the standout character in that series. I think it's a good idea to bring them together. It says that this crossover will see Johnny and the gang investigating a mysterious, potentially alien spacecraft being held at Area 51. And, you know, Dynamite's got a history of successfully reviving and reinventing classic properties. I think Space Quest looks to continue this tradition. It's got that mix of retro charm and maybe some modern storytelling could do it some good. Hopefully the art is good. I think the comic will appeal to longtime fans of the original cartoons for sure, and hopefully newcomers too. Check it out over on page 90 of the previews catalog. It's Space Quest number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment.
This is Nick with a pick from the Dynamite section of the main previews catalog, page 97. I'd be lying if I said I didn't have a special place in my heart for Red Sonja. And here we have Red Sonja Attacks Mars. I believe there was a Mars Attacks Red Sonja series a couple years ago. I lose track with the various mix and match type things that Dynamite will do with these characters. But they're always goofy whenever you get Mars Attacks in here. And it sounds like Red Sonja is taking the fight back to them this time around. They mentioned that all covers are cardstock, 32 pages, $4.99. And it mentions, if you had no doubt that the 90s were having influence on today's readers, it says all copies of covers A, B, and C come polybagged with an exclusive new collectible trading card. So get a trading card featuring one of the cover designs here. Writer is Jay Stevens, and the artist is Fran Struken. Let's see. Yes, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure Jay Stevens is the one who did the Dwellings book. That was fun, and he's also been working on Tales from the Abyss. All right, so it says in the solicitation, while serving out a life debt, Red Sonja uncovers a sinister prophecy of cosmic foulness from beyond the stars. To stop the imminent destruction of the world, the she-devil with the sword must trek from the desert south of Hyrcania all the way to the northern shores of the Laet Sea to face down the insidious invaders from Mars, not to mention the serpent men, metamorlocks, and ancient angry monster gods that she meets along the way. So maybe she doesn't make it to Mars, at least not in issue one. Rising Horror Comics master Jay Stevens and Red Sonja Mars Attacks artist Fran Struken stir in the cross-genre flavors of retro sci-fi adventure and dark comedy into the cauldron of ancient Hyborian terrors, and the results will have readers crying, ack, ack, for more. Stevens and Struken's fevered imaginings are further seasoned by brain-bending new covers from Joseph Michael Linsner, Jay Lee, Jun Chung, and Greg Land, art that will be featured on exclusive trading cards, polybagged with every copy of covers A, B, and C, like I already mentioned. And this promises to be a interplanetary event for the ages, according to the tagline here. And if you want to read about it, there's a little breakdown with writer Jay Stevens, given his background on the properties and all that stuff.
This is Jason with the pick from the previews catalog on page 115. It's the Green Hornet, Miss Fury, number 3. As the true identity of the masked murderer is finally revealed, the Green Hornet finds himself pitted against his closest friend, with Miss Fury's life hanging in the balance. Luckily, the pulp heroine is no shrinking violet herself, and the shocking results of her own investigation may prove to be the key to survival for all three of the costumed crime fighters. Written by Alex Segura and artist is Federico Soresi. This is issue 3, which I believe is going to be a 5. They don't really tell you, but a lot of these end up being 5-issue miniseries, which I'm pretty sure this will be a miniseries. It's 32 pages for $4.99, comes out in March of 2025. So they've done a good job of going back to the, not quite the golden age, but more of like the early silver age, I guess, with these characters. So you got a little bit of noir and pulp feeling goodness as well. And I look forward to seeing what the reveal is and then how they're going to continue this series going forward. But I recommend this if you're a classic pulp character fan, noir fan. It's a nice series, and they've got a good handle, I believe, on the characters for this.
This is Nick with a pick from the Dynamite section of the main previews catalog, page 115. I can't remember if I called that the first issue of this mini series, but it is the Green Hornet, Miss Fury. This month we're advertising issue number 3. All covers are cardstock, 32 pages, $4.99. Writer Alex Segura and artist is Federico Soresa. And it's just nice to see these characters still floating around. I always like to see what Miss Fury is up to. And Green Hornet, of course, is a classic character in the comic genre. And if you remember a couple years ago, Dynamite really had like multiple versions of these characters out per month and back-to-back-to-back miniseries, so it's nice to see a little break, bring them back in, tell a fun crossover story. The solicitation text says, as the true identity of the masked murderer is finally revealed, the Green Hornet finds himself pitted against his closest friend, with Miss Fury's life hanging in the balance. Luckily, the pulp heroine is no shrinking violet herself, and the shocking results of her own investigation may prove to be the key to survival for all three of the costume crime fighters.
This is Jason with my pick from the previews catalog on page 134. It's Solomon Kane, The Serpent Ring, issue 1 of 4 from Titan Comics. It says, Solomon Kane is back. It's the much anticipated return of Solomon Kane from Patrick Zercher. Patrick Zercher has done an amazing job with Solomon Kane, and he had a great story in the first 3 issues of Savage Sword of Conan, issues 1, 2, and 3. It was one story that was broken up into 3 parts. Probably should not have had that 3rd break, but it was a wonderful story. He really did well with the character of Solomon Kane, and you felt like you were in that Puritan setting where you have rapier sword, you have single-shot flint pistols, and pretty much you're on your own in terms of taking care of the bad guys and supernatural threats that Solomon Kane always pursues in his adventures. But I'm glad that just like they gave Conan to Jim Zub and Roberto De La Torre to kind of run with and see what he's going to do with that character, with Patrick Zercher, he's both the writer and the artist, and I hope that he continues to do many more Solomon Kane adventures. It is interesting that the Conan the Barbarian Free Comic Book Day special that's coming up here in May is also called, or it's dealing with the serpent, called Scourge of the Serpent. So I don't know if there's going to be any crossover, but it looks like this will probably be a Solomon Kane 4-issue miniseries of its own. There are some wonderful covers here on page 134. You have J.H. Williams III. The next cover is by Mike Mignola, which it really fits the Solomon Kane environment. And then cover C is the actual artist who does the art and the writing. It's going to be inside Patrick Zercher. That's cover C. But there's lots of great preview pages, and it just looks phenomenal. You feel like you are a pirate on the seas here. But they also did an interview earlier in the previews catalog with Patrick Zercher. And I like how he talks about the Solomon Kane as a monster hunter archetype, where he later on was reflected in characters like The Shadow, Batman, Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, Vampire Hunter D from manga, Witcher from video games, and Van Helsing, but this is the Hugh Jackman version of Van Helsing, not the one from the original Dracula, who was an older gentleman, but somebody who was very active, acrobatic, could fight with a sword, could shoot well, you know, all those things. Solomon Kane is a very interesting character. He has a code that he believes he's doing the right thing. He believes that he is sent on a mission to destroy evil. And he believes that, you know, no matter what, he's singularly focused on that. But there is something about the gothic horror supernatural that Robert E. Howard has done with a lot of his characters that brings it to life more than it would just be a pirate story or a regular sword and sandal story. Like, he really has done well with these characters. So I look forward to seeing what Patrick Zercher has in mind and what he's going to be doing for Solomon Kane. And it's just a four-issue miniseries, but I'm hoping it'll do well. People will support it and see the great work that he's doing and what an interesting character that Solomon Kane is. And I'm hoping for many more. There was another story in Savage Sword of Conan that had a bunch of other characters in the Blackstone story arc. And there was a small story with Solomon Kane that it left you wanting for more, like hoping that, man, I wish they had strung that out a little bit more so we could see more of the characters that Solomon Kane was traveling with. I believe he was in Hungary at that time, dealing with the Turks who were invading. But yeah, it ended up taking, I guess, because each character that was involved had the shorter stories, and so they had to wrap it up quickly. But it made me want like a fuller fleshed out story of those characters, like a little history behind them. How did Solomon Kane end up with them? What happened after Solomon Kane left? So anyway, I look forward to this. I highly recommend this if you are a Robert E. Howard fan. I think you'll definitely enjoy the series, and the art is impeccable. And like I said, Patrick Zercher really has a great hold on who the character of Solomon Kane is.
Hey, this is James here with my first pick in the previews catalog, and I went all the way to the Titans section on page 134, where we get a brand new miniseries. It's one of four, Solomon Kane, it's The Serpent Ring, and is written by Patrick Zercher, and he's also the artist. Patrick is a fantastic artist. He's done some work in, I think it's Savage Sword of Conan in the past. For Titan, he did a really good job. And they have some preview pages in here, and it looks like the art is going to be really nice. So I just have to say, pick up a previews and check it out. Page 137, they have the interior art, and I really enjoy it. Solomon Kane is a quirky character. Sometimes I really like him, sometimes I don't. It depends on the story being told. I hope I do enjoy this one. He is a Puritan. I believe he's like 17th century, so basically like the 1600s, a Puritan from England. And they take Solomon Kane to parts of Europe and Africa where he tends to fight, him being a Puritan and very religious person, demons and things that are evil. And it definitely works for me. He carries a pistol and it looks like a French rapier or a little sword, you know, tournament sword. But he's not a barbarian type at all. He's a little bit different, but when he's written well, it can be very good. So I'm definitely going to be picking this up. It's only a four-issue miniseries. The bad news is for the four issues, at least issue one, it says $4.99. Comics have gone up to $5. We're getting to that point of diminishing returns with the price ever increasing. But on to my next pick.
Brawlinator again, and this is one I've been waiting for. It's on page 134, and it's Titan Comics set to release a new comic series titled Solomon Kane, The Serpent Ring. And this is, of course, based on the character created by Robert E. Howard. The series is written and drawn by Patch Zercher, known for his work on various comic titles. You've heard of Patrick Zercher before. In this adventure, Solomon Kane, now he's a Puritan swordsman, almost like a Van Helsing, but with a very fundamentalist Christian bent. So he's a Puritan for sure. And he embarks on a quest to find an ancient artifact dating all the way back to the days of Conan the Barbarian, which of course is another iconic character created by Robert E. Howard. So Solomon Kane is searching for the mysterious serpent ring, and he of course has to confront dark forces and numerous challenges along the way, I'm sure. Fans of Robert E. Howard, and maybe even those new to the characters, should find some excitement and intrigue in this new series from Titan. And don't miss out. Solomon Kane actually, I think, made a brief appearance in the Blackstone series, which sort of was bringing the Robert E. Howard characters together. But I think this is kind of a cool idea that you've got this serpent ring that has already been told about in Tales of Conan many hundreds of years prior to Solomon Kane. So this could be cool. I hope it is. I hope it is an engaging tale that connects the two legendary heroes in their world. So check it out for yourself, Conan fans and comic book fans writ large, on page 134 in this month's previews catalog.
Hey, this is James back with another pick. I am not sure if I'm picking this up, but I just thought it was really cool because I've never seen something like this. On page 142 in the Titan section of the previews catalog, they have some new Conan merch. They have some bottle openers, t-shirts, things like that. But literally at the top of the page, they have Conan and the Tower of the Elephant board game. It is a board game. There's a tower sitting there. The Tower of the Elephant is a great story. I enjoy it. Conan is a thief, you know, climbing up the tower. They have this guy who has literally an elephant head, basically his time as a thief taking treasure. And I don't know how this is going to play out as a board game, but I just found it very unique. It doesn't have a price on here, so I'm imagining I'll have to wait for the order form to see how much this thing costs. But it looks really cool. So if you guys have family or friends who you might want to tie in a Conan night when you're getting together and having a few beers, this might be something you want to pick up. Very cool. On to my next pick.
Billy Hogan again. My first Dark Horse pick is on page 241 of previews with Black Hammer, Spiral City, number 5. Jeff Lemire is the writer, and the main cover and art is by Teddy H. Christensen, and Tyler Crook does a variant cover. The Eisner Award-winning superhero saga is back in this earth-shattering story that's essential for all superhero and Jeff Lemire fans. A newly formed Liberty Squadron returns to save the city only to be treated as misunderstood villains. With the election just a few days away and the fate of Spiral City hangs in the balance, Black Hammer Spiral City is the next era of the Black Hammer universe, a 7-issue dystopian event series by Jeff Lemire and Teddy Christensen, and is scheduled to be in shops on April 23rd for the cover price of $3.99. I received the first issue of this miniseries in my last shipment from Discount Comic Book Service, but I'm a little behind on my comic book reading, so I haven't had a chance to read it just yet. It's near the bottom of my pile because I always put the comic books I enjoy reading the most to, and save them for last, but I know I'm going to enjoy this issue as much as I have all the other Black Hammer series. Billy Hogan again. My final Dark Horse pick is on page 244 with Usagi Yojimbo, 10,000 Plums, number 2. The writer, cover, and story artist is Stan Sakai, and a variant cover is done by the Escorza brothers. A group of the Shogun's men are found slain in the Plum Tree Forest, and the only survivor is a young village girl, reeling in shock from the attack. Usagi, Yukichi, and Jin agree to help protect the plum trees and prevent more tragedy from befalling the locals, but will their swords be enough? The latest Usagi story continues. An all-new color Usagi story from Stan Sakai features the return of fan-favorite character Jin. It's scheduled to be in shops on April 9th for the cover price of $4.99. Usagi Yojimbo is one of my favorite non-superhero characters, and I enjoy every issue. And it's always one that I save until near the bottom of my pile because I look forward to reading it the most.
Hey, this is James here with another pick in the main previews catalog, and this time I'm on page 246, where we have the most prolific guy at Dark Horse coming out with a new number one, and that's Mark Miller. And the artist is Pierre Berg. The comic is called Vatican City Number 1. Knowing Mark Miller, this will be a 5 or 6 issue miniseries, and let's see what it's going to be about. It says the all-new series from New York Times bestselling author Mark Miller, the world has been overrun by a vampire apocalypse. Every man, woman, and child dead except 2,000 tourists safe behind the walls and holy relics of Vatican City. But as the vampires gather in their millions outside, how long can they hold out? because the monsters can wait forever. So kind of cool. People are trapped. It's a play on so many things you've seen. You've seen people like in Aliens, the movie Aliens, trapped in space with the alien creature. You've seen in The Abyss, people trapped underwater, not able to escape and having to deal with the confines of being trapped. And here it's the same thing. The Holy See has blessed Vatican City and kept the demons, the vampires, at bay. But the vampires can kind of wait you out forever because they're immortal. And you're slowly starving to death because there's not a lot of, I imagine, food stores and water for a siege to go on for any length of time. So I think this one's going to be very clever. I'm on board for it. And I love Mark Millar. I think he is a fantastic writer. On to my next pick.
Brawlinator again. I've got my penultimate pick this month. It's on page 245 in the previews catalog in the Blink and You Might Miss It Dark Horse comic section. I really like the premise for this. It's a new 3-issue comic series called Vatican City, and it's written by renowned comic book writer Mark Millar and illustrated by talented artist Peter Berg. Now, this series pits vampires against the Vatican in an epic battle during a vampire apocalypse that has wiped out all of humanity except for about 2,000 tourists and the Vatican staffers who are safe in a place filled with vampire-repelling holy water relics and crosses. What a clever idea. Mark Millar is just one of the best storytellers in comic books today. He's always got unique perspectives. He's a captivating storyteller. So I'm sure this will deliver. From what I've seen of Berg's illustrations, it should keep a very tense atmosphere. And there are some cool covers, one by Mike Mignola. All the covers are over there on page 245, 46, and so on. But I think this is probably one of the more highly anticipated new Millar titles at Dark Horse. I was listening to Mark Millar's podcast where he interviews various greats in the comic industry, and he called this one Assault on Precinct 13, but with vampires. When Assault on Precinct 13 is an old John Carpenter movie. I think it should make a very nice addition to the world of horror comics and Dark Horse. I'd really like to see Dark Horse really get back up on their feet. But check it out. It is Vatican City number 1 this month on page 245 in the previews catalog.
What's up, guys? This is Patrick, and I am in the previews book now officially. We're looking at page 249, which is the IDW. And I am on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 8. Writer Jason Aaron seems to be I read a lot of Jason Aaron books lately. Artist is Juan Ferreira. And we have Donnie's on the Edge. One of the most reliable and risk advised of the TMNT, Donatello's mind is spinning out of control following his violent stay in captivity. Fortunately, his brothers are there to protect him from the army of foot ninjas, bent on destroying them all. How can the Ninja Turtles save Donatello from a voice of their dead master Splinter that Donnie insists he's hearing in his head? I actually read number 5. Spoiler, that one's actually about Casey, and 6 and 7 obviously aren't out yet. I can't wait to read them all, and I'm hoping they fix this Donnie thing because we need all these 4 boys back together. TMNT Naruto is right underneath. TMNT Naruto was awesome too, so pick that up also. All right, thank you guys. Enjoy. I'll be listening to your picks. Peace.
This is Jason with another pick in the previews catalog on page 272 from Andrews McMill Publishing. It's Calvin and Hobbes Portable Compendium Volume 4 softcover. It says Calvin and Hobbes is one of the most popular comic strips of all time. The imaginative world of a boy and his real, only to him, tiger first appeared in 1985 and could be read in more than 2,400 newspapers when Bill Watterson retired on January 1st, 1996. This compact, portable collection of comics would easily fit into backpacks and bookshelves. Featuring archival slipcase and cover art selected by the author, the Calvin and Hobbes Portable Compendium pays tribute to the strip's origin in newspapers while appealing to both new and existing fans of Calvin and Hobbes. Featuring nearly 500 comics presented chronologically from December 1989 to April 1991. So this is the 4th volume, so they're slowly collecting from 1985 and will eventually complete through 1995. But yeah, this is a very fun series that my grandfather had showed me when I was a kid, and I had ended up buying the hardcovers, which this is easier to haul around. The hardcovers, all 3 of them together inside their slipcase, are like 35 pounds. But I've actually been reading this with my daughter. We've been reading basically two pages every night, and so we're slowly getting through it. We've been reading it the last few months, and we're up to 1997. So it's been a fun read, and I look forward to continuing this. So, but this is a nice way to collect it as well if you don't want the big, bulkier hardcover books. But I definitely recommend this. Probably one of the best comic strips, if not the best comic strip I've ever read personally. But I know there's a lot of good ones out there, but this is definitely a fun adventure to go on with Calvin and Hobbes.
Brawlinator again, and for my final pick, I have to give another shout out to Private American, the limited series from Antarctic Press that I helped edit, and it's this month's action-packed third issue and final issue for this first volume. It's written by my good friend, the talented Mike Barron, known for his work on The Punisher and Nexus, and it features just great illustration work from Richard Bonk. The series continues to deliver patriotic fervor as Carlos Zamora, the shamed ex-Green Beret, who is a.k.a. the Private American, faces his most challenging mission yet as a mysterious benefactor steps in to support his elite military training, which enables him and others to unleash hell on international terrorists and human smugglers crossing America's border, all the while helping and protecting the innocent migrants. Mike Barron's masterful storytelling shines in this issue, weaving an intricate narrative I think will keep readers engaged on the edge of their seats, grab them by the throat, as Mike likes to say, and Bonk's artwork perfectly captures the gritty atmosphere and intense action that's necessary for this kind of story. It's a visual treat for sure. I really like Richard's work, and if you've pre-ordered the first two issues, you're not going to want to miss this one. It's got a dynamite cover, too, by the great Dan Lawless. That's Private American number 3 from Antarctic Press over on page 274 of this month's previews. And that's it for me. Thanks again to John, James, Sam, Eric, Kay, everyone that makes the Comic Book Page podcast and the Slack community possible over on the Slack channel. You know, I say it every month, it's still true. This is a great community. I encourage others to join in the discussions. I encourage you, if you're just listening and you've never recorded a solicit as part of the preview spotlight, I encourage you to do that for next month. Go ahead and as soon as you get that catalog, pick a couple and record them and upload them. John makes it very, very easy. And he'll even edit you a little bit to make you sound good. I hope everyone's ready to have a great new year, and I look forward to hearing your selections right now.
This is Jason with another pick in the previews catalog on page 295. It is Mud and Madness number 4. It says, in the chilling installment of the hit World War I horror series written by award-winning duo Peter Bro and Jaden Bro, and illustrated by the hauntingly beautiful art of Alessio Nocerno, Canadian and German soldiers trapped in a chaotic underground burial chamber must reluctantly unite against a resurrected demon Templar and his skeletal army, racing against time to thwart a rogue soldier intent on unleashing an ancient artifact's malevolent power that could doom humanity itself. So this is a in-the-trenches World War I, basically the Allies event against vampires and other type stories. So I look forward to checking this out. I believe this is, yeah, it says it's 4 of 4. So this is the very last cover, so or the very last of the series. So I look forward to checking this out, and we'll see how it ends, if it's able to land the ending. This is Jason with another pick in the previews catalog on page 336. From Gold Key Entertainment, it's Gold Key Select, Boris Karloff Thriller, number 1. Step into the shadows with Gold Key Select, where eerie tales of yesteryear await. Ghostly apparitions and spine-chilling mysteries entwine in this masterful collection. Let Karloff's haunting voice lead you through a realm of suspense and supernatural dread. Are you prepared to embrace the lurking darkness? This is a 36-page comic book for $5.99. It does look like it's a little bit bigger. It's 7 by 10 inches. Whereas they've done Boris Karloff Thriller, like kind of a reboot of it, a couple of issues of that. This looks like it's going to be mainly a reprint of previous Gold Key comics where Boris Karloff had his own series. So I look forward to checking this out. I'm hoping it's like the best of the best stories that they're putting in here. But I did enjoy the first two, which were newer stories, whereas this one is a reprint of hopefully some good classic older stories. So if you like those, I'm pretty much a big fan of anything Boris Karloff. And so He was a host of a lot of television shows, of course, after he did Universal Studios, Mummy, and Frankenstein. But yeah, I look forward to checking this out, and I hope they keep doing these for the foreseeable future.
Hey, this is James here with another pick in the main previews catalog, and this time I'm on page 343 in the humanoids section, where we have a new, it's hardcover book. I was looking to see if it was trade paperback, but it's hardcover. It is called Arcadi, I don't know, and the Lost Titan, 528 pages. It's hardcover, mature title. It's expensive. It's $85, but you're going to get a nice discount from Deep Discount Comics, Eric, on the forums. This one, it's tagged with sci-fi fantasy epic. It says, collected in English for the first time, renowned artist, Kaza, C-A-Z-A, Kaza, epic masterpiece. 10,000 years ago, the Earth stopped moving. Half the world was plunged into frigid night, the other in scorched in the daytime. Basically, the Earth's not spinning on its axis. The side of the Earth's getting cooked, the other side is frozen. Young warrior Arcadi, whose tribe lives in the thin strip of habitable land known as Twilight, must brave the wide, dangerous outer world to discover why the world stands still, and to rescue it, if he can. So, it's very, very, very cool. It's a cool pitch. This guy kind of looks like, from a tribe, he's walking around, and looking at some of the art right now. They have colder clothes, warmer clothes, depending on what side of the earth they inhabit. He looks kind of like Conan-esque type character. Not a barbarian, per se, but wearing like a loincloth and a cape, carrying a spear, and actually a sword strapped to his back. He definitely looks like Conan. And the art in this is just gorgeous. It looks fantastic. And it says, it evokes things like of the Meta Baron, some things that I like, humanoids series that have come in the past, like the Incal and the Meta Baron. And this will be an oversized book. The art, the interior pages just look gorgeous. And I am definitely on board for this. So if it sounds like it's something that's up to your alley, pick it up, check it out, and definitely pick up your previews catalog so you can see the interior artwork. If you don't pick up previews, you can go to the Humanoids website and they'll give you preview pages. On to my next pick. Hey, this is James here with my final pick in the previews catalog. And this time I'm on page 378 where I'm looking at a comic. It's a trade paperback soft cover called On Mars. It is a mature plus title, and it says, it's kind of funny in here, crime doesn't pay, but it does terraform Mars. Okay, so this one is written by Sylvain Runberg and illustrated by Grun, just G-R-U-N, Grun. In 2132, mankind has reached Mars, something we're attempting to do right now, in a desperate grasp to survive a dying Earth, because we are killing Earth. That is why we're trying to get to Mars. Constructing such an ambitious colony requires an army of manpower, which Earth provides as conscripted prison labor. But when the workforces rise up, the fate of humanity is on the line. Brilliantly visualized by artist Grun, this explosive sci-fi prison drama by writer Sylvain Runberg introduces disgraced police officer Jasmine Stenford as a broad spectrum of characters, factions, and political players who all have different plans for the new world being built. Who is really in control, and can anyone truly claim the planet on the verge of man-made evolution? Now, if you go through here, there's actually just one page, the next page, of interior art. This book looks beautiful. It is sci-fi. It's 180 pages, $24.99, but you get a discount from Deep Discount Comics. It sounds like it's right up my alley. I'm definitely going to pick this up, so check it out. I wanted to thank everyone who sent in a clip this month to John. I know people get busy with the holidays because as I'm recording this, is January. We just got done with New Year celebration, Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever you guys celebrate. But I do appreciate everyone who took their time to send in a clip to John. I want to thank John for hosting this and editing our clips. I'm sorry if I sound a little bit bad. I have a really sore throat. Something happened where basically my voice might sound a little bit different. So if I sound weird, don't worry. I'm getting over something. But I look forward to seeing you guys on the Slack channel. I look forward to seeing you guys in the book club. And until next month for the preview spotlight, see you guys later. Bye.
This is Jason with another pick in the previews catalog on page 391. It's Cruel Kingdom, issues 3 of 4. This is a EC Comics, kind of a reboot or rebranding, I guess, and it's done by Oni Press. And this one focuses more on sword and sorcery or sword and sandals. It says, "Yes, fair reader, the terrible wonders of this cruel kingdom are far from over. Steal thy wits for more tales of sadistic sorcery as forged in the foundries of the immortal EC tradition, to be revealed in the pages of this forbidden text. All new, dread-drenched spells of magic and myth summoned from the cauldron via mad wizard by the vaingloriously violent writers," and then it goes on to list those characters. So I'm hoping that they are going to do well with this. It's only 4 issues, so I'm committed to the run, and I look forward to see this new rebranding of EC Comics if they're able to hit that good sword and sorcery type of characters. Usually there's a little bit of irony in their stories, so I look forward to seeing what they're going to pull out of this series. And hopefully it'll do well, and they'll do more in the sword and sorcery genre. This is Jason with my last pick in the previews catalog on page 421 from Tomorrow's Publishing. It's back issue 159, Crisis on Infinite Earths 40th Anniversary Special. This is an 84-page magazine for $10.99. So I know Billy Hogan is going to be doing a clip on this as well, but very interesting timing because in the DC Connect catalog, DC has been doing the Crisis on Infinite Earths 12-issue maxi series facsimile editions, and they are actually soliciting the last 12th and final issue of that Crisis. So this is very interesting because you get to see the analysis of the Crisis on Infinite Earths. It talks about the multiple Earths that used to exist before this crisis happened that condensed it all into one Earth. And it looks like we've got either interviews or different things where they've talked to these creators who were involved in it. And it's literally a who's who. You've got Marv Wolfman, George Perez, Steve Englehart, Mike Barr, Paul Levitz, Doug Minch, Jerry Ordway, Roy Thomas, Mark Waid, and it just goes on and on. So Tomorrow's Publishing is very good about digging into different aspects of comic book history and bringing it to life, giving a lot of details that you may not know, and also giving a lot of context to the story. So I definitely recommend this if you enjoy that Crisis on Infinite Earths, if you enjoy any of those creators. Like for me, there's several that stand out that I would love to know more about. I'll always want to know more about what went into that planning for the Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, what their original plans were, how things changed, who had what pull and sway to make things happen. So I definitely look forward to that. Definitely one of the most momentous times in DC Comics history.
Billy Hogan again. My final pick in this month's previews is on page 421 with Black Issue number 159 by Tomorrow's Publishing. It features articles and art by various creators, and the cover is by the late, great George Perez. Crisis on Infinite Earths 40th Anniversary Retrospective, celebrating the Marv Wolfman, George Perez magnum opus, a pre-crisis tour of DC's multiple Earths, an analysis of Crisis and its crossovers, the Crisis Death List, post-crisis DC retro projects, a guest editorial by Marv Wolfman, and more. Featuring Mike W. Barr, Steve Englehart, Robert Greenberger, Paul Levitz, Elliot S. Magan, Doug Munch, Jerry Ordway, Roy Thomas, Mark Waid, and more. Representing the cover of Crisis on Infinite Earths Index No. 1 by Perez, edited by Roger Ash and Michael Urie, and is scheduled to be in shops on May 14th for the cover price of $10.95. I don't always get magazines by Tomorrow's because of the more expensive cover price, but they're always worth it, and I could not resist getting this issue on Crisis on Infinite Earths. I collected this miniseries back in the late 80s, early 90s, a couple of years after it was published and DC had revamped their entire comic book universe. If you haven't read this story, I would suggest getting one of the various collected editions because it's worth the read. And it's a look at DC Comics of a bygone era. Thanks, John, for providing this forum so that we can all share our enthusiasm for the comic book medium. And thanks to all the other contributors. I look forward to hearing what everyone else is going to read out of this month's previews.
My next pick is also on page 421 of the Diamond Previews, and it is also back issue number 159. Now, I know we've already had a couple of people talk on this. It's the 40th anniversary special covering Crisis on Infinite Earths. It is mind-boggling to me that it's been 40 years since DC basically revamped their universe, multiverse, and honestly, it's never been the same since. I'm looking forward to this. It's a shame that George Perez isn't still with us to be able to contribute something to this. Again, we've got a great cover by him that was used on that Crisis on Infinite Earths index number 1. I'm sure there will be a ton of mention of him by Marv Wolfman and everybody else involved in this because he was such an instrumental part of it. This series couldn't have been done without him. And again, it fundamentally changed the DC Comics publishing line. I think it had a major impact on the comic industry as a whole. I don't think we would have had the event comics of today without this. So I'm looking forward to it. Who knows, might be interesting to do a roundtable discussion once this comes out on kind of 40 years after Crisis. Was it a good idea? Was it not? Something like that, maybe. I don't know. Just an idea I'm toying with based on this. So once again, back issue number 159, Crisis on Infinite Earths 40th anniversary special. Check it out on page 421 of the Diamond Previews. My next pick is on page M64 of the Diamond Previews. We're in the toy section. Now, normally when I call something like this out, it's something I'm going to get, but I'll tell you flat out, I'm not going to get this. And that's because I already have it actually in my hand at the moment. And this is Rubik's X Wednesday Cubers 3x3 Puzzle Cube, which is definitely a bit of a mouthful. Now, I haven't gotten around to watching the first season of the Wednesday show yet. I know it's been out for a while. I just haven't had time. Apparently in it, Wednesday Adams has a Rubik's Cube in 6 shades of gray because she's allergic to color. This is that cube. Now, it even comes with a little display stand shaped like thing, you know, the hand. Now, I'm really curious about this. I first discovered this cube on one of the YouTube channels I follow on Rubik's Cubes probably just a 2-3 months ago, if that. So fairly recently, but long enough ago I've had time to actually get the cube in my hand. And y'all know I read comics and stuff like that. What you may not realize is that I also am a longtime Rubik's Cube fan. I mean, when I say long time, I was part of the original Rubik's Cube craze back in the late 70s, early 80s and such, even going to a small cubing competition at the time. And that was back when solving the cube in a few minutes was a really good time versus the world record of today is literally 3.13 seconds. The original cube, you couldn't move that fast to get that kind of times. Anyways, I don't know when or if I'll take this one out of the package because one of the things I noticed in the video, and certainly can see it here, is you've got one side that's white, one side that's black, and then a couple others that are shades of gray. But I swear one of those is like an off-white and not a very far off-white, making it a much harder cube to solve because you're looking at pieces that you can't tell exactly where they go because it's as if two faces have the same color. Anyways, I think it's a little wild that they are doing essentially a licensed cube this way, but I think it's awesome. Now, this is not the first grayscale Rubik's Cube that was done. I believe there was the Rubik's Icon around 2007. I don't have that, and if somebody knows where I could get one of those, that'd be kind of cool. It's not the exact same cube because it's got like a reflective silver for one side. It's got black and darker shades than this has. So I would be interested in getting that. And I think somewhere around here I did pick up a grayscale cube because I'd seen one of those in the background of another YouTuber I followed. Anyways, here on page M64 is the Rubik's X Wednesday Cubers 3x3 Puzzle Cube. If you're a fan of the show, if you're a fan of Rubik's Cubes, it's like $19.99, which is a perfectly reasonable price. Plus, you'd probably be able to get it through a discount at Eric over at Cowabunga Comics and stuff if you shop through him, and if not, you ought to consider it. I've been a happy customer of his for years. So, once again, Rubik's X Wednesday Cubers 3x3 Puzzle Cube on page M64 of the Diamond Previews. I hope everyone found something of interest in the pre-order catalogs this month. I want to thank Jason, James, Brawlinator, Billy, Patrick, and Nicholas for sending in clips. The Preview Spotlight has an open submission policy. I want to get more voices and opinions in these episodes. We've got our regulars. They're great. They're awesome. But I want to hear what the rest of you think, too. Sending in a clip is as easy as recording it on your computer or smartphone and sharing it with me through email or Dropbox. Sending in a single clip is fine, and the reason I want more people participating, each of you have a different taste in comics, a different perspective on comics, and you may find things that the rest of us are just missing. It's flown under our radar, or you know something about it that would convince us to get it. And if you don't participate, then I don't know you're out there listening. You can participate by sending in clips to the preview spotlight, or by joining the conversation on the Slack channel and the forum, or by sending in questions for the monthly comic spotlight or the back issue spotlights, Astro City, Legion, Warlord, or just emailing me and letting me know you exist and what you think of the podcast. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. I think you're listening to this because you enjoy listening and talking about comics. So, join the conversation. Now, the deadline for the preview spotlight is normally the second Saturday of the month. Early submissions are always appreciated. You can always check the main page of the Comic Book Page website for the latest information on the next deadline and to sign up for email reminders. The deadline for preview spotlight number 207 covering the February solicitations is 9 a.m. Saturday, February 8th, 2025. Again, I want to thank the people who sent in clips, and I want to thank you for listening. Hopefully you discovered something new in this episode. And with that, we'll call it an episode. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.